All right, welcome back. And joining us now is author Jared Julia. He's also a parent. He's also somebody who homeschooled his kids, and he is an activist. And I don't think he homeschooled, but we will be talking about some homeschooling as well. He also has a book that kind of teaches some fundamental truths to parents about what is going on in the schools, as well as in a format that parents can use with their children. The book is called Critical Feather Theory, The Red Offenders. And I think that's a pretty good name because, as one person said, it's kind of a cross between Alice in Wonderland and Animal Farm. And I kind of feel like that's where I live on a regular basis. So joining us now is Jared Julia. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Thank you so much for having me, David.
Now, tell us a little bit about how you got into this. I mentioned homeschooling because I know that you have comments about that. But your kids went through school, right? And that's what got you involved in this.
Right. Yeah, they went through the public school system. I think that if I was younger, I might have homeschooled my kids because things have just gotten progressively worse as things have gone along. So I am active in the homeschooling movement, and I go to a lot of their conferences and things like that. But yeah, the way in which I got involved was during, I've always had this belief that the school system, there's something wrong with what our kids are being taught, but I couldn't really put my finger on it. And then as the slowdowns happened with the pandemic and lockdowns and all that, I had the time to really research it. And as I'm peeling back the layers of the onion, I was pretty disturbed by some of the stuff that I found out that goes into the K through 12 curriculum, how it's created. So, but I also saw that there were a lot of academics that had done a great job of describing the problem. So, but I wanted to create something a little more accessible. So that's why I got the idea for our graphic novel. So there's a little teacher bird in a little schoolhouse, and she teaches the little chicks that if they have blue feathers, they're privileged, and if they have green feathers, then they're a victim. And she's teaching critical feather theory, and of course the parents get upset, and she denies that they're teaching critical feather theory because she says that it's only taught to second year law students. So basically, it kind of tries to make a humorous, it's a humorous take on really a subject that a lot of parents find pretty disturbing.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And we've seen these various colored birds hatching this plot for a very long time. But as you point out, most of the stuff that's out there can be very rigorous academic stuff. I mean, I've seen very, very detailed commentary about that, going back to the author, Charlotte Disserby, who said deliberate dumbing down of America. You know, they right. go into it in a great deal of detail. You're not going to be able to go through that with your kid. And it's as important for them to understand what this is and to have discernment about this, even more so important than for the parents to have it. Because they need to, as soon as that stuff goes up, it's like, oh, I know what this is. When we taught our kids, I would right. teach them what the consensus false ideas were, and then I would oppose it and say, so here's what they're going to tell you, here's why that's not true. And that's really what you're doing here in a graphic way, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's unfortunately public schools aren't doing what you did with your kids. They're just indoctrinating. They're just telling them one viewpoint, and they're not really opening it up to multiple viewpoints. And that's really the whole point of education.
Yeah,
they're literally doing the opposite of what education is. And it's because it's derived from something called postmodernism. And without getting too dry, there were a lot of unrepentant Marxists like Herbert Marcuse and Michel Foucault who created this belief system. And this is what a lot of what kids are being taught. This is what's showing up in the curriculum. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just being nice to everyone and getting rid of racism and getting rid of all unfairness and getting rid of all sexism. It's really a tearing down of society, which is really what Foucault's work is about. It's called deconstruction, mm-hmm. and it's really tearing apart society and tearing apart our communities. And what I try to say in the book is I try to briefly and humorously explain what that is, but then also give parents hope that you can fight against this. You can push back against this. You don't have to take this. This is not an inevitability. Mm-hmm. This is definitely... up for grabs, and it's worth the fight because your kids are worth it.
You know? Absolutely. Yeah, I interviewed Xi Van Vliet, and I played a clip yesterday, I think it was, of this Netflix thing, Three-Body Problem. It was a Chinese sci-fi, and it begins with the struggle sessions, and it's a very moving, disturbing struggle session. But Xi Van Vliet said, look, what they're doing with all this stuff, you it's not enough to not be racist. You got to be anti-white, you know, and you got to denounce yourself. And she said, this is precisely what the communists were doing, what Mao was doing, and all the rest of the stuff. That's why you're spot on when you talk about it's Alice in Wonderland meets Animal Farm. So many times we'll look at what is happening in the news and we'll say, this is crazy. Look at how crazy this is. And that's basically where people would stop a few years ago. I'm trying to get people to see that it's more like Animal Farm than it is Alice in Wonderland now. That this is a Marxist regime. You talk about the red offenders. Maybe that's
the red offenders are actually the Gang of Four from the Cultural Revolution in China. And you mentioned the three-body problem. The fascinating thing about that scene with the struggle session is that a lot of the soldiers are actually children, because the Red Guards were not really like the SS. They were more like the Hitler Youth. The youngest were about 12 years old and the eldest were about 18, because that's who you can get to destroy the society. That's who you can get to tear down the culture. Older people, you can't really get them to do that. Mm-hmm. But kids were able to gleefully destroy these priceless works of art from the Ming Dynasty and other parts of cultural China. And it was these kids that really enforced a lot of these insane rules. And it's so much, it's so similar to what we're experiencing now. That's why I have the red offenders kind of follow along with the main characters. So the main characters are not from a woke time period, and they experience all this woke and they're horrified. But of course, the red offenders, the Gang of Four, are also experiencing, and they're like, this is great. This is exactly what we want. So,
yeah. And the description of the book, it's some guy from 1971 gets catapulted in the future. And he can't believe how crazy this is. And I told my wife, I said, that's me. I'm still, my mind is still back in the 1970s as far as culture goes. And it's like, I'm looking at this and like, what is going on? And you can't make sense of it unless you understand it's not Alice in Wonderland, it's Animal Farm. And then it all makes perfectly good sense. And this has all just been recycled, relabeled. They call it woke. Isn't it interesting? Don't you find it interesting that they would use the term woke when these people are totally asleep to how they're being used and what this is truly about? Right. They get to pick the labels, of course, though. And we always use their labels. That's one of the things that bothers me so much about it. You understand the significance of red, and and so did Xi Van Vliet. But, you know, the media comes in and tells everybody, okay, all you Republicans and conservatives, you're going to be red from now on. Okay, we're red. We got our red hats, and we got red this and red that, you know, and we're red states. And we just use their labels. And they say, well, we're woke and you're red. And they go, okay, and we'll use those labels.
It's interesting that you say that, because the Gang of Four, they labeled everything. And actually, the term political correctness was actually coined by Chairman Mao himself. So it was very, very important that they determined what everything was called so that they could make the framework for all political argument. And you're right, the woke left does the exact same thing today. They come up with all the terms. Once upon a time, they were illegal aliens, but now they're undocumented immigrants, and now they're just immigrants. Mm-hmm. And all of the different terminology over the years that have changed have all been changed by them. So, which is why there are so many scenes in the book where they have these little bird soldiers burning all the dictionaries so that the woke overlords can change the definitions of words, because changing the definitions of words and changing what labels we use in our political speech is central to their power.
Oh, yeah. AP is ruthless about it, the Associated Press. They've got their speech rules. And if you want your article published, you will use their speech rules. You know, you're not going to be pro-life. You're going to be anti-abortion rights and all the stuff in terms of what they refer to as people who are illegal aliens. I simply started calling them squatters. I think that's probably the best term, which is dispense with all these other things, just call them squatters. But, you know, that would kick me very off close. From AP. So, you know, but they understand that they got to get the high ground rhetorically. And so they use the labels. Now, you know, before we leave the analogy of what's going on with the three-body problem and the struggle session, one of the key things about this, you know, we can all take our kids out and we can homeschool them. But in that scene, you see the daughter there who is by herself. Everybody else is on board with a struggle session and yelling and screaming at the people that they're beating and so forth. But she's horrified by it, but she's the only one. We don't want to be in that situation where we're the only one left in a town or a society or a community, the only one who is not a part of this struggle session. And like Alex Newman has said in the past, he said, you know, you look at the school system, you realize, first of all, it's like a burning building. You got to get your kid out of there to save them. But then you've also got to put the fire out so that it doesn't burn down the entire neighborhood. And that's really the important thing, I think. Where, you know, and looking at your book, if somebody's got their kid in school, that'll help to wake them up, but it'll also, really importantly, help to wake up the kid. But then there's other things. Tell us a little bit about what we can do to fight this woke ideology so we don't have the neighborhood burned down.
Well, I guess the first thing not to do is what I tried to do. My son was being taught something that I didn't agree with at our local high school, and I confronted the teacher about it at a teacher conference, and it was diplomatic, and she actually immediately apologized and said, oh, I won't do that anymore. But then the next year, I found out from a neighbor that their kid was in that teacher's same class, and she went right back to teaching the same thing the very next year. Mm-hmm. So we need to understand that this isn't like the left versus right ongoing debate, where we on the right really believe what we believe and people on the left really believe what they believe. The woke understand that factually they're incorrect and it doesn't matter to them. Mm-hmm. So this is a very, very different kind of fight. And that's why I say you really need to get involved. And the wonderful thing is that there's lots of people that are out there. Parents Defending Education, Nicole Neely does a great job. CourageIsAHabit.org. Alvin Louie is the National Executive Director. These people are doing great work. So I would encourage your listeners to join one of these organizations or other organizations. I have them listed in my website. And that's the way I would do it instead of just being an individual, because then you're like that person in the three body problem. You're the one person crying out. Yeah. But one thing that I would say about that scene is that it looks like a majority are on the side of the Marxists, but
true.
We find that that was never really the case. And that we see all these people doing the Nazi salute, you know, at these rallies, you know, for the, you know, during Hitler's reign. And we realized that, you know, most people were not. I mean, the Nazis never got more than 19% of the popular vote in Germany. So they're never really, they have the appearance of having overwhelming majority, but they really don't. This is a relatively small group of people. Mm-hmm. Now, of course, they are well positioned in areas of education and in areas of the media and in government. But there's a lot more of us. And I find that there's so many left-wing parents that have bought my book and have reached out to me via social media. I mean, we really have a natural supermajority to fight this, because, which makes sense, because, you know, just not wanting your kid to be taught this crap, you know, I mean, that can't know a party affiliation, that can't know an ideology. It's just parental common sense.
That's right.
And so I think there's a lot more people on our side.
Oh, I agree.
Then we realize.
I agree. Yeah, they're afraid of the perceived majority. And, right. You know, even if it is a majority, we've got to have the integrity to stand up to that, even if that means, as the expression goes, I had friends who are from Japan. They said, we've got a saying here that the nail that sticks up gets hammered down.
Right.
So, you know, kind of keep a low profile, do what everybody else is doing, anything. Well, we can't live our lives that way. If we live our lives that way, we'll all be hammered down. We'll always have a boot stomping on our face. And so we have to stand up to this, even if it doesn't work for us personally. Enough people are going to see that they're not the only one. That's the key thing that they always pull on everybody. Everybody thinks that they're alone in this when they really aren't. That's a key insight. Talk a little bit about homeschooling what other options we have besides homeschooling. But let's talk a little bit about homeschooling. We've had a lot of people, and this is one of the things, Jared, going back to 2020, I said, you know, one of the silver linings about this, all this lockdown stuff and everything, was I talked to parents for the longest time. They could easily say that this was something that was coming from Washington or from the State Department of Education, maybe even from the local school board, maybe even at their own school. But they would always say, but it's not in my kid's classroom. They finally got a chance to see, yes, it is in your kid's classroom. So you know, when you look at this kind of stuff, and sometimes, you know, we do need to resist this by opposing these curriculums with these government schools that are there. But we also understand, as you were talking about with the teacher, they're going to teach whatever they want to teach, regardless of what the state says or the school board says or the principal says. That teacher is going to teach the kids what they want to teach them, and they put up TikTok videos talking about how they're going to put out the revolutionary ideas that they hold to their kids, and they take delight in the fact that they're doing it in a surreptitious way and against right. the system. So that's one of the things you're looking at. It's one of the reasons why people would homeschool. Talk a little bit about homeschooling. As you said, it was something that you didn't see at the time. Tell us what you see with homeschooling now.
Yeah, well, I think that the pandemic was such a game changer, because it went from schooling became in the classroom to the kitchen table, when a parent would open up a laptop, click on Zoom, and their kid would attend class that way. And they saw what these teachers were actually saying. So this isn't something happening in the Berkeley school system or in some school system in the Bay Area or something like that. This is happening in your school system and in my school system. And I do think that woke up a lot of parents. The other thing is that when I was growing up, there wasn't a lot out there for homeschoolers. And homeschoolers were seen as kind of weird and this small group of parents. But now it's far more common. And there's all kinds of resources on the internet to create curriculums for parents. And there's all kinds of support. And also, the perception of the public school system is a lot lower than it was a generation ago. So it's a much, much better and much more accepted option. The other thing is that there's a lot of misconceptions, is that you can't be involved in sports or be involved in extracurricular activities if you're homeschool. That's actually not true. The lead in our plays, when my kids were at the local high school, they were a homeschooled kid, and there was a lot of the athletes in our school sports were actually homeschooled. But because they lived in that particular district, it was state law that they were allowed to participate in that school system's extracurricular activities. So this notion that your kids are going to miss out somehow, it's just not true. And of course, the perception that they're going to get a lesser education. Well, when you see some of these TikTok videos, it's unimaginable they could get a lesser education from you doing it yourself.
That's true. Yeah, and you know, I think a lot of the parents maybe even realized that they were homeschooling in 2020, even if the kids were doing Zoom classes and other things like that, because there's some homeschooling curriculum that is set up to be exactly like that. Your kids can, for the longest time, people are homeschooling, and there's so many different ways that you can homeschool. But some of the methods were for somebody to actually do a Zoom type of class and be in a live class like that, not just watching a lesson. You know, there's all these different ways to do it. And so, you know, there actually were entire homeschool curriculums that were set up to do exactly what the government schools were doing in 2020.
Yep.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So talk a little bit about, you know, some of the other methods. And again, it has just exploded. I mean, there's so many different ways that people can homeschool. There were a lot of different options when we were doing school, but it really has exploded. What are some of the more popular ones that you've seen?
Well, what we've seen is groups of parents getting together on social media and then having social events where they all come together so that they can interact with other kids that are also being homeschooled. This is not something that happened a generation ago, you know, before social media. But because of social media, there's just this explosion. And the community of homeschoolers just becomes bigger and bigger. Every year that I go to these conferences, there's more and more people. And in fact, one of the conferences here in Maine, they had to go to a different venue because the old venue couldn't fit all of the parents that wanted to understand the new trends in homeschooling techniques. So, I mean, it's just...
I can only imagine. I know 30 years ago, we would go to the North Carolina homeschool convention, and it was overflowing. They couldn't contain it, you know, 30 years ago. And now it is, I'm sure it's way, way bigger than that. What other options do people have if they don't want to try homeschooling that you would recommend to them?
Well, I mean, what we do is we just took a very active approach to our child's education. And I think that the kids that are most vulnerable to woke are the ones that are not where their parents don't take all that active a role in their development. My wife was a long lifetime teacher, and she actually owned a preschool. And she noticed that parents that made a game out of counting the buttons on the kid's coat when they were about to go out for playtime, that those were the kids that performed the best. The kids that just had their parent just help them put their coat on and send them off did not do nearly as well. So really, parents have a lot to do with your kid's education.
Yes.
So even if you're going to a public school or a private school, you still have a lot to do with your child's education. Reading to small children is so important. And making a game out of learning is very, very important. Teaching them techniques for studying and note-taking are also important things that schools don't really teach you. Mm-hmm. And so it's vital. And you have a bigger role, I think, than a lot of parents realize. They just, the ones that just send them off to school, those are the kids that get indoctrinated, I think, to the yeah, largest degree.
That's right. Yeah, I have an older sister who taught for many years, mainly in the 70s and stuff. And she would always say that she could tell the kids that were going to do well because their parents were involved. And if the parents were not involved, the kids are just not going to do well. And it's because of all those other little things like you're talking about, you know, the fact that they're going to count the buttons as they're doing it. It's just that kind of interaction. And, you know, when you homeschool, you're just doing a little bit more of that. But it really is that involvement there. If the parents are involved, the kids are going to do well. And that's the way it has always been, even before all the Animal Farm stuff started coming into the schools that's there. What about, what was it that you saw happening with your kids? You were in, what kind of, were you in a small town? What kind of a town were you in? And what did you see happening in government school there?
Yeah, I mean, I live in a small town in Maine, so you'd think that we would be insulated from a lot of this. But, you know, we saw a lot of education when it comes to sexuality and things like that, that were very, very offensive. Mm-hmm. And it's funny how my daughter and my son were about 4 years apart. My son just graduated from college. But when he was in high school, he had classmates that identified as an animal and they had tails and things like that. Mm-hmm. Whereas my daughter, who was there 4 years earlier, didn't have that. There were some boys that were gay that identified as girls. But, you know, when my son was there, it was identifying as an animal. So it's just, it's gotten progressively worse. And this is not the Bay Area. Once again, this is not Midtown Manhattan. I mean, this is a small town in Maine. Mm-hmm. And you do. It's so important that you push back on it, because you can't just write it off and laugh it off and say, oh, this is so ridiculous. Who would believe this? Because when they can get them at a young enough age, as Marx once said, you know, if I have them up until the age of six, you can have them after that. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. because when they can get them young enough, they can really mold these minds. And there's nothing that's too ridiculous for these kids to internalize.
Well, that's
so
right.
You've really got to point out the utter ridiculousness of some of this stuff that these kids are being taught, and not just rely on them to discern this stuff themselves.
It's very calculating, and people have always known that truth. As you point out, Marx said it. We've had so many people say that throughout history. We had Plato said it. You had the Bible says it. You know, train up a child in the way they should go. When they're old, they're not depart from it. So this is what they're exploiting, and they know exactly what they're doing. You talk about how rapidly this is changing and growing like a cancer, the furry stuff. And we've talked about that on this show in the past. But people look at it and they say, well, this is really Alice in Wonderland. No, it's Animal Farm. And it really is. It is that Marxism that is at the center of it. It is this desire that we've always seen from totalitarian politicians and others to control society completely, grab these kids at a very, very young age. We used to have an expression, the hand that rocks the cradle rules the world.
Right.
You know, if they take the kids away from the parents and they're working at it to try to, well, we'll expedite things for you. You know, we'll give you free childcare. Of course, you'll pay for it in taxes and other things like that eventually as you go to work. But, you know, we'll give you all these different things. Just let us raise your kids. And it truly is amazing. So, you know, talk a little bit about school choice as well. You said that's exploding where you are.
Yeah, school choice is exploding as well, because it's really allowing the market to take over. Because, you know, there's no real incentive for some of these schools to get their act together. But with school choice, when parents can take their children and their dollars with them and go elsewhere, that's very, very important. So we have about 10 states in the last 6 months that have changed their school choice legislation. Mm-hmm. And so it's a lot easier and a lot more damaging to underperforming schools that these school choice initiatives are happening. So I think it's great. It really gives me a lot of hope, because I feel like the tide is starting to turn. That's turning the tide in K through 12. I think the whole Claudine Gay thing with Harvard University and that whole scandal, that's starting to turn the tide in higher education. I see a sea change where there's pushing back on this madness. And I really feel as though it's important, because like you were saying, it's not just Marxism. What I've seen in my research is that one of the biggest lies that we're told is that Marxism is way over here to the left and Nazism is way over here to the right. But then when I started researching, I found that Michel Foucault, a Marxist who's a postmodernist, and Martin Heidegger, who was a Nazi, they exchanged a lot of information. And a lot of what Michel Foucault came up with when it comes to deconstruction actually came originally from Martin Heidegger. And Martin Heidegger was appointed the president of Freiburg University by Adolf Hitler himself. And he was afraid that he was going to get tried in the Nuremberg trials and executed. So he was able to do a lot of things after World War II to try to, you know, get out of being prosecuted. And he never was. He died of old age in 1976. But still, it's disturbing how much overlap there is with Marxism and Nazism. And in this ideological and philosophical overlap is what we call woke. It's amazing how many trans people that say, oh, I can be my authentic self when I go to work, how much of that it comes from Heidegger's philosophical research. Mm-hmm. So it's really, like I said, the more you peel back the layers of the onion, the more you're disturbed by not just woke, but the origins of woke.
That's right. Yeah, I've said for the longest time that if you look at what life was like under Stalin versus Hitler, it's life under in a totalitarian society. And the thing that really differs about it is the direction, the lies that they told people to get them into a totalitarian society. It can be about hyper-nationalism or it can be about internationalism. You know, the communists would talk about the international and the Nazis would talk about nationalism. But they would use different approaches to get you in there. And I guess maybe Heidegger or maybe Hegel took a page out of all this stuff and used the Hegelian dialectic, you know, because they can pit these two different things against, oh, look, you know, Nazis are completely different from the communists. And it's like, well, no, they have strongly held priorities about things, but they use those priorities to get them enslaved into a totalitarian society, because as you pointed out at the beginning, this is really about postmodernism. This is about removing the idea that there is some objective fact or some objective truth, and that is now rampant, isn't it?
Right. And the other thing is they even use some of the same techniques, like you were talking about dividing the child from the parent, that's something that the woke do. That's also something that the Hitler Youth did. That's also something that the Red Guard and the Kazimov, which is the equivalent of the Hitler Youth up in Soviet Russia. So all of these were trying to separate the child from the parent, because they understood that you needed to destroy the family, because the family unit is the foundation of society. So if you want to tear down communities and then tear down a society, you have to start with the family. So part of it is, you know, in popular culture, making fun of father figures and things like that. Mm-hmm. Also, parents, you know, kids telling on their parents. And also even little things like during the Great Leap Forward, they had these community dining areas where instead of the family meal, you would dine with everyone in your village as a way to stop people from having family time together, because they understood the power of families eating together, of families doing activities together, and how this really reinforces society. So when you're deconstructing like Foucault does, when you're trying to tear all this down, you really need to start with the family.
Yes. Yes. It is a fundamental building block of society, isn't it? It's the first institution that God gave us, was the family. And so they've got to tear that apart. Once they split that nuclear family, we start to get a chain reaction, don't we? And I, when I look at even some of the language that we use, just like we're talking about red, the fact that they're going to apply that to people who call themselves woke, even the term postmodernism, it really doesn't convey the true meaning of it. I like to refer to it almost as post-objectivism, because that's really what postmodernism is. You know, people don't understand what modernism was. They don't understand the idea that you had the German higher critics that were looking at the Bible with critical theory. You know, they still use that term, and so they would deconstruct the Bible with critical. So they call that modernism. We're going to debate it, and then it went to postmodernism, which says, well, we're not even going to have a debate. We're just going to say, I've got my truth, you've got your truth, and there is no such thing as truth. That was their fundamental truth, that there is no such thing as truth, and so we get into that absurdity that is there with postmodernism, and all these things they cloud it with the terminology that they use, don't they?
Right. Yeah. And there's so many people that woke people that say, well, you this is my truth, or we need to speak our truth. And there's so many postmodernist thinkers that view that as an important aspect of all this, because then it becomes unassailable. If someone's talking as a woman, or if somebody's talking as a person of color, you cannot debate that. You cannot question that. Really, what one of the foundations of Western civilization is our ability to debate and our ability to question everything. This is why we're so far advanced scientifically. This is why we have the freest societies, because we question everything. We ask why not constantly. Mm-hmm. And woke is a reversal of that. It's wanting to stop that, reverse it, and say, don't ask any questions. You cannot debate. You have no right to, because I'm speaking my truth.
Yes, yes. That's the brilliance, I think, of Orwell's 2 + 2 = 5. He knew they were going to get at the essence of facts and truth, and what is more objective than to have a mathematical equation. But now we see that they're coming out and saying, well, math is racist and everything else, because that's ultimately where this goes. Orwell knew it. Solzhenitsyn knew it. Anybody who looks at totalitarian societies know that they have to destroy objective reality. They have to destroy debate. They have to destroy the family. And unfortunately, we see all of this stuff happening in our society. That's why, a book like yours that can explain this to kids is so vital and so important for people to be able to see that. And to go over that with a kid in a graphic novel format, which is going to get that truth across to them at a very visceral way, I think that's a genius move on your part.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, and it's just so important that I guess one of the negative things that I see is just that this was foreseen by Orwell and by other thinkers. Mm-hmm. This was so avoidable. We didn't have to go down this road, because Orwell called it. He saw that. I had kind of an Orwellian moment when I was looking on a website of a college that had a list of words that you could no longer use. And then I thought back to near the end of 1984, where the guy is talking with Winston and saying, well, we don't need all these words. These few words are plenty. And literally reducing the number of words. It's like if it gave Orwell nightmares, it's kind of a wet dream for the woke.
It is amazing that we see all this stuff happening, and of course, it is made possible for them by dumbing kids down, and they've been doing this now for several generations, dumbing down the people so they don't know history. They don't have any discernment about what the overall scheme of this is. They don't see has been done over and over again in other countries. That is an essential part of their success. And that's why an essential part of pushing back against this is to explain this to kids in a way they can understand it, in a format they're going to be open to. And that's really what your book does, I think.
Yeah, and it's so important to understand your own history, because it was Stalin who said, we are the first page of history. He didn't want people to know that anyone came before us, or that, okay, people came before us, but that doesn't really matter. What they said or what they wrote or what they believed doesn't matter. All that matters is going forward. And when you do that in a society or in a community, you now make everyone so much easier to control. That's the other disturbing thing about woke, is that everything about it, it doesn't reduce racism. It doesn't make things more fair. It just makes the most people more pliable. It makes them more able to be controlled by a small number of elites. That's really all it does. And it does it very efficiently. Mm-hmm. But it does it using a lot of the same techniques that the Soviets and the Nazis used to suppress their populations as well.
That's right. You target people. You isolate people. You make them make everybody feel like they're alone and vulnerable.
Yes,
that's the key thing, you know. And so when I look at the voucher system and these charter schools and stuff like that, my only concern about it, I think it's good. I think we should have a marketplace and ideas. But I think the only way that we're going to retain our ability to be able to make those choices in a marketplace as if that money is truly ours. And that's the thing that concerns me about it. You know, when you're taking the money from the government, that's a string that they're going to use to control you in the same way that they did it to the states or to the counties. They set up the Department of Education. It's got this massive amount of unlimited money because it's coming from the federal government. They can just print whatever they want. And then they use that money to bribe people. And then if you don't do what they want, like you don't put the boys in the girls' bathrooms, they pull that money away from you after they get you addicted to it. And so when it all starts, it's a good thing. You know, hey, we got a market here. I've got a certain amount of money that I can use to make my determination about how I want to educate my kids. But if you start making choices that they don't like a few years down the road, after you get connected to this, they're going to pull that string, and most people will then go with what they're comfortable with. They've forgotten how they can do this on their own. And so that's the concern I have about that.
Yeah. And you know, so many people that say, oh, you can't get rid of the Department of Education. I just want to say to them, did you know that the Department of Education did not exist before mm-hmm. the early 1960s? It's like, mm-hmm. how do you think we educated kids before that, from the founding of our country all the way up until the 1950s? And a lot of people would say our education system was better back then mm-hmm. than it is today. In many ways, it was. You were able to get by with a high school degree. You knew a lot more about history. You knew a lot more about mathematics when you graduated from high school than you do today. And I even saw that in comparing my high school education with my mother's. I went to college, but my mother never did. But she felt as though she knew a lot more coming out of high school than her children learned. And it's time for this to go. It's a big, wasteful bureaucracy in Washington that really controls things in a way that most people are not on board with. And I think if it got eliminated, I really think that you would see a drastic improvement of education. The world would not end. Education would not suddenly cease to exist if we got rid of these. And the other thing that drives me crazy is people that think that these teachers' unions have something to do with education. You know, the UAW, the United Auto Workers, they have nothing to do with the quality of cars.
That's right.
They're just getting the best deal for their workers. And these teachers' unions, they have nothing to do with education. They have everything to do with getting the best deal for their members. And there's no shame in that. But you just have to realize that's not part of their agenda to educate your kids. That's it right. has nothing to do with it. And especially during the pandemic, when they were wanting to keep kids out of school and then wanting even the smallest kids to wear a mask, that had nothing to do with education, and it had nothing to do with science we're learning. Mm-hmm. German kids didn't wear masks at all during the pandemic, because we knew that that they were not affected in the same way that the rest of us were affected by COVID. So it's just the Department of Education and these teachers' unions, they ruin education. They don't improve it. And to get rid of these things would not harm education at all. In fact, it would improve the situation.
Well, you can even say that about schools, right? School and education is so intertwined in people's minds, and they're two separate things. You don't need to have a school in order to have an education. Frequently, the school gets in the way of your education. Certainly did with me. Mm-hmm. And you go back and you look at colonial times. We had almost 100% literacy. They were able to change society by, sending a book around, Thomas Paine's Common Sense, because everybody read. And, they didn't have government schools. In some places, they had community schools or church-run schools, but it was under tight local control of the community and of the parents. It was not some agenda that was being created in Washington. And so we've had for the longest time politicians promising to get rid of the Department of Education. It was just created in 1980 during the election that was happening there. Reagan said he was going to get rid of it, but he never did. And we see how that has been used with the strings that are there. And I think it's important for parents to understand, just like it's important for kids to understand what they're trying to do in the schools in terms of manipulating them and this postmodernism and all the rest of this stuff. I think it's important also for the parents to understand the techniques that government uses to control people. And it really does kind of boil down to the fiat currency and how they can pay anybody any amount of money and get you addicted to this stuff and use that as a Trojan horse to control you in everything that you do. It truly is amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I do think that we need to get back to basics with our education system. And, these postmodernists and these woke people that say that parents should have no say in the education because they're not education professionals and just leave it to the educators. Look, we're in this problem because we left it to the educators largely.
Yes.
And, parents, very active parents, are the ones that are going to pull us out of this mess.
I'm glad you went back and looked at these philosophers and everything. And of course, we could see it in Horace Mann and Thomas Dewey and people like that. And even before them, in the mid-1800s in America, we had a lot of these utopian societies where they were basically communist in their organization. And they wanted to change society. And they said, the reason that our utopian society failed was because the parents instilling these ancient values in their kids. So we got to break that. And that has been something that has been a subcurrent to all of this so-called reform of education in America since the middle of the 1800s. And people, if you're aware of this history, and you cover a lot of this stuff, if you're aware of the philosophical history, the political history of this stuff, then you really see where this is headed. And, it's very important for people to really understand the history of Marxism. They keep that from being taught in the schools very carefully because they don't want everybody to see how that is exactly the plan that they're rolling out on us. And it is very concerning to see it, but it's great to see some resources out there. Again, the book is a Critical Feather Theory, The Red Offenders, and you can find that on Amazon. Is that the best place to get it? There you can see the graphic novel aspect of it. Okay,
right.
Good.
Amazon or just Google Critical Feather Theory. So.
Okay, yeah. All right, great. Thank you so much for joining us. Again, Jared, Julia, thank you for joining us.
The David Knight Show is a critical thinking super spreader. If you've been exposed to logic by listening to the David Knight Show, please do your part and try not to spread it. Financial support or simply telling others about the show causes this dangerous information to spread farther. People have to trust me. I mean, trust the science. Wear your mask. Take your vaccine. Don't ask questions.
Using free speech to free minds. It's the David Knight Show.